Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. The Culture Secretary joined Andrew Marr this morning to discuss the government's plans for regulating social media companies. Ahead of a planned visit to Silicon Valley tomorrow, Jeremy Wright told Marr of his intentions.
Are you going to be meeting Mark Zuckerberg?
I hope so, but it will be up to the companies themselves to decide, obviously, who they want to put up to talk to me. But what I'll be talking to them about is what the UK government thinks is necessary to keep its citizens safe. Now, I want to make sure that what we put forward is effective in that regard, and I'll be talking to these companies about how we do that. But I'm not asking their permission to do it. I'll be talking to them about exactly how we make it effective.
But you don't know at this stage who you're going to meet.
Well, I believe that we will be meeting very senior people from all of the companies that we're going to talk to. And at the moment, I expect to be speaking to Mark Zuckerberg as well. But in the end, it's up to those companies to decide how much they want to engage with this process. But the British government will come to its own conclusions about exactly what's necessary to keep our citizens safe. And there's no doubt that we can't any longer, I think, rely on the internet companies to do this for themselves. We need to take action as a government, and we intend to do that, but I want to make sure we get the design right.
You can't talk about a regulator. Presumably you can tell me whether or not you believe that criminal sanctions are appropriate.
Well, look, what I can tell you is this. I think what's important is that we have a system in place that sets out clearly what the responsibilities of online companies are, sets out how we expect them to meet those responsibilities, and sets out what will happen if they fail to do so.
Criminal sanctions?
Well, we will consider all possible options for penalties. And it's important, I think, that those companies that we will be talking to and those companies from whom we'll expect a positive response to this understand that there are meaningful sanctions available to us if they don't do what they should. That's what I think we owe the families of those teenagers.
A lot of your predecessors have come on programmes like this and said much the same thing, and nothing has changed. How will you be judged as a success or failure in this?
Well, I think we'll be judged by what we produce and how it works, and that's one of the reasons I'm taking my time over it. I make no apologies for that. I think what people want to see is a system that will work. So that means making sure that we have thought through the design, making sure we have thought through the penalties, making sure we have thought through what agency should be responsible for holding these online companies to account. Because when we've developed this proposal and when we've seen it operate, that's really how we'll be judged, whether it in fact succeeds in making the internet a safer place, because that's what people expect of us.
Marr also asked Wright about the case of Shamima Begum, the teenager who travelled from East London to join the so-called Islamic State when she was just 15. The question has been raised as to whether Begum and her newborn baby should be allowed to return to the UK.
As a former legal man yourself, is her baby British?
Well, I think that is a difficult question, as you said. It's not straightforward. But what really matters, I think, is to determine what should happen instantly and urgently to her, because we do have to be concerned about the health of that baby. We have to be concerned about her health too. But in the end, she will have to answer for her actions. So I think it's right that if she's able to come back to the UK, that she does so. But if she does so, she will do it on the understanding that we can hold her to account for her behaviour thus far. I think that's the right way to do
this. You're not going to help her to come back. In other words, we're not going to send British officials to the camp to get her back.
Well, I think that's a very different question. What I do think is that British citizens who only have British citizenship are entitled to come back to the UK. That's a matter of international law. But as a matter of international law too, and domestic law potentially, people also have to take responsibility for their actions, and she will be no exception to that.
Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell also sat down with Andrew Marr, and they broached the topic of anti-Semitism within the Labour Party. Figures were released earlier this week showing that the party had received 673 official complaints since April. Marr asked if Labour was doing enough.
Has Labour got a no-tolerance for anti-Semitism policy?
Yes, we have.
The reason I ask that is we've now seen the figures, 146 cases of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. It's got a written warning response. That's 146 examples of tolerance, surely.
What we've said is, and I'll just give this example, shall I? Naz Shah was my parliamentary private secretary, and she made some statements which were anti-Semitic. She immediately, once it was pointed out to her, to give her due, she immediately recognised it, apologised, went through what was effectively almost a training exercise, visiting synagogues, meeting with the Jewish community. Now she's held up as a shining example of how you acknowledge what you've done, apologise, and then learn from it. Mm. That's what we need for a lot of these cases. But where it's intolerable, where it's repeated, I was on this programme, I said before, not only should we kick them out of the party, in my view, they should be life bans as well.
You're not kicking out many people.
We're not fast enough, and that's why Jenny Formby really, she's doubled the staff, brought in a QC that will give us proper legal advice so we don't lose any cases, and is speeding through it. And also she's suggesting reform. She's multiplied the number of committees that are dealing with it. She's also suggested other reforms. We've got to be ruthless about this. And the reason I'm saying this is because I want to sort this issue out in our party, because I want us to be contributing to tackling it in wider society. I've said this on your programme. I don't want to live in a society where Jewish graves are daubed and where children go to Jewish schools after our protection. We've got to tackle that. It's appalling.
Sophie Ridge spoke to the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, about the Brexit outcome he wanted to see after 29th of March.
For us, the customs union is crucial. Greater Manchester sends 60% of its exports to Europe. You know, we cannot be in a position where, from the beginning of April onwards, those businesses are facing barriers and tariffs. We can't, because that will damage those businesses. It will result in jobs being lost. So that is why we're saying we need that working customs arrangement. And I'm afraid the time has come for the Prime Minister to part company with those hardliners in her party, because there is not a deal that she can do with them that will be acceptable to the rest of the country.
So just to be clear, if you're saying that the only thing that's preferable to a second referendum is no deal, does that mean that you'd accept the Prime Minister's deal above a second referendum?
No, I don't think we should be forced to accept a suboptimal deal. You know, with all of the uncertainties around the situation in Northern Ireland, I don't think we should be required to accept that. There is a better deal, I believe, that can be done, and one that could unite Parliament. And it's a deal that has a customs arrangement as part of it. I think there is a majority in Parliament for that. But the Prime Minister won't put that proposal to Parliament for fear of the damage it will do internally to the Conservative and Unionist Party. Now, this is the problem, Sophie. This is the point that we've arrived at. You know, other Tory leaders in the past have taken on these hardliners, and I'm afraid it's time for the Prime Minister to either do that or let Parliament take control of this situation.
Ridge also asked Labour's former deputy leader Margaret Beckett about the rumours that a small group of Labour MPs were about to split and form a new party.
Do you think that the party could actually split over Brexit? Because it does feel as if, I mean, I know the Conservative Party is grappling with the same problems, but if you look at the Labour benches, there are such different views when it comes to what should happen on Brexit. It does feel quite hard to hold this coalition together.
Well, there are different views right across the House of Commons. I mean, it's quite as straightforward as that. There are people I know who have been working desperately hard, people outside the Labour Party, who've been working hard for years to try to persuade the Labour Party to split. I think it's a big mistake. I hope none of my colleagues take that advice, because it's the worst possible advice they can have, at the most basic and brutal. If you want to change an organisation, you don't change it by leaving it.
What would the consequences be?
It wouldn't be good for them or for the party.
And finally, Ridge interviewed Richard Dannett, the former chief of the General Staff, about what happens now that President Trump says the so-called Islamic State is ready to fall.
Has there been 100% victory, and are you happy to see the US pulling back their troops in Syria?
Well, I think there are several issues there. The caliphate in 2014-15 made a strategic error, which has worked to our advantage, in that they chose to occupy large swathes of territory. And in doing that, they then provided themselves, set themselves up, if you like, as a physical target that could be attacked. And over the last 4 or 5 years, that is what's happened. Their territory has gradually been reduced, their towns and cities have been recaptured. Raqqa most prominently fell quite some time ago. And they are reduced to a very small little bit of territory, which will probably be overrun by allied forces really quite soon. That doesn't end the caliphate idea. It's an ideology, it's a dream, it's a vision, and it will reoccur elsewhere. I'm afraid that's just a fact of 21st century life. The fundamentalist Islamist movement that we've been combating and seen so sort of all over the place since 9/11 is going to pop up elsewhere. We're seeing it particularly in sub-Saharan Africa at the present moment, and that is a concern, as we will probably see it elsewhere in the Middle East. So it's not 100% victory.
we may well complete the recapture of the territory that they had, but the ideology, the thinking, the support behind it, that is going to continue, and that will become, or will remain, the struggle for this generation, perhaps even the next generation as well.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffeehouse Shots podcast on the iTunes Store, and we also have a special offer. You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 issues for just £12, and you'll receive a free Aspinall wallet worth £60. Just go to spectator.co.uk/Aspinall. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to my daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/Evening Blend. Thanks for listening, and do join me again next week.